Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
All right, what's going on? Welcome on into the first episode of the week of the Calcho Land Podcast. Yes, I am not David. You are very keen there. I am Alex Goldberg, and this is a unique episode, you could say. David right now is not doing too well. He is certainly under the weather, so to speak. He's had a little bit of a health scare these last few days, but I'm happy to say that he has turned a corner. He is almost back to his normal self. So hopefully the next episode you hear from this podcast has David in his normal host seat and all is well. I will just say, my God, does this guy love doing a podcast? And I love how much he loves it. He even really wanted to effort doing it late last week when all of this was starting with his health scare, so to speak. So he really hates not being here, but it is so important to him that we get out content, that's what we're going to do. We're going to get out content, good content, I hope. That's really up to me and my guest. And this guest, I really can't call him a guest. Like, he is a co-host. He really is a co-host. And David is not absent all too much. But normally when he's absent, David's finally getting a little bit of a break, a little bit of a holiday vacation, what have you. This time we know it's not under the greatest circumstances. But whenever David is not here, I bring in Mr. Serie A, as I joke with him. He really is the guy who I can bounce all of these topics off of and get even more keen perspective and insight that I could ever give you. Sure, everyone knows I do follow Serie A regularly. Every day I'm checking up on something Serie A related and trying to watch Serie A games. But if you know anything about me, I'm 24/7 Chelsea. So I'm already way overflowing with Chelsea stuff that it would be wrong if I just did an episode by myself on what's going on in Serie A. I need somebody a little bit more knowledgeable to bounce things off of. So in this episode, we are just going to talk about a lot of relevant topics. Just a lot of relevant topics. It's not going to be your normal episode where we have all these segments, game picks, we have an interview at the end. No, hopefully we'll get back to that ASAP when David has returned. But we will give you some good topical Calcio talk. And we're going to do that with Mr. Claudio Perfetto, of course, is a contributor with the DiMarzio camp. So it's always great to get DiMarzio family members in here. But really, if you've heard me host an episode of the Calcio Land podcast, you've probably heard Claudio on the other end. So speaking of Claudio on the other end, Claudio, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, Alex, as always. I'm looking forward to doing the podcast with you. I wish it was under better circumstances, as you said, and David was somewhere maybe in Jamaica with a margarita in his hand, but we wish him all the best and a speedy recovery, and hopefully he can be back for the next episode. But in the meantime, as always, we'll have some fun together here.
We absolutely will. We will. And I'll have fun in this first topic, because this first topic, and I'm not forcing it, listener, I'm not forcing it. This first topic is kind of Chelsea related, and that's the topic of Jorginho to Juve. So, quick background. Many people are like, what? Didn't this die down because Arturo went to Juve? No. I mean, certainly that made the need a little less for Jorginho, but everyone has been speaking about Juve's quote-unquote weak midfield all season long, or the fact that the midfield is really their Achilles heel, and just signing one midfielder shouldn't kill off other midfielders being rumored to the black and white, but especially Jorginho. We know the love that Sarri has for Jorginho. And I can just say on the Chelsea side of things, he's only becoming more likely to leave. And it's not because he's not a good player. It's not because he's not a good professional. He absolutely is. But he's kind of a victim of circumstance. Chelsea are making a lot of moves, but also finally figuring out what direction they really want to go. And I mean that formationally as well. The loss to Bayern Munich was a little bit of a wake-up call to Frank Lampard regarding what midfielders he can trust defensively and how he wants to style his team. And now it really looks like Frank wants to go with paired eights, often two attacking eights, and then a six, so then a true DM, which is why he's played N'Golo Kante there a lot lately, trying to transition him to a lone DM, which Kante's actually never been in his career. He's been a paired DM, but still, that's not Jorginho. He's not a true six. So it does look like the rumor of Juve getting Jorginho is only going to heat up. Now, there still is a roadblock here. Juve don't want to pay up front for Jorginho. So it's been mentioned very recently, like super, super recently, really as of today, that maybe Juve could do a deal like they did with Cuadrado with Chelsea, where it would be a multiple-year loan. And then, of course, it does turn into a signing, but it's structured payment-wise in a longer way, in a way that Juve can stomach it, rather than just coming for a player like most teams do. And for Chelsea, fine, they'd still be receiving payments, maybe just with a different structure, but they'd still be getting money, and they'd be getting rid of the player. And I'm not saying they're trying to get rid of Jorginho at all costs, no. But if he doesn't fit into Lampard's plans for next season, why would you hold on to him? You wouldn't. So, Claudio, I feel this rumor will only gain momentum. So let's move past the actual rumor. And I want to ask you, if Juve got Artur, who they already have, but if they got Artur and Jorginho this window, how much would their midfield improve, in your opinion?
Yeah, so it's a great question, because I know on this podcast in particular, and it's well known that they've really lacked midfield help over the past few years. It has to be a focal point for them to rebuild the midfield, because while they've spent a lot of money in attack, especially, you know, purchasing Higuain and then Ronaldo, and now last year with De Ligt in defense, they've spent a lot of money in those areas, but the midfield has not been a focal point of their spending. The last significant, you know, signing was really Pjanic, who now left for Arturo. So I guess they see the writing on the wall, which is a good thing. And first by bringing in Arturo, and now if the Jorginho thing does happen, the interesting part to me is that it really seems to confirm Maurizio Sarri, who, you know, I know he will most likely be the manager again of Juventus next season, especially now that it seems like they're cruising towards another Serie A title, given what's happened since the restart. But it really does confirm him, because he loves Jorginho, obviously, and Jorginho mostly follows him wherever he goes. So it would be great for Sadi to have Jorginho there. And Jorginho is just, you know, he's a very good player. Like you said, he's a good facilitator. He's not a true defensive midfielder, which, you know, I guess Juve doesn't really need one. And you know, Sadi doesn't necessarily need to have that in his system. So I think along with Arturo and Bentancur, who's really made steps forward while playing for Juventus and also under Sarri this season, they're building something, you know, a little bit more stable, a little better in the midfield, because just the free signings that they've tried to done, whether it be Ramsey or Rabiot or Emerson or, you know, whoever it may be, they've tried to take the cheaper options. Not that free transfers are cheaper, because you obviously pay a lot in wages and commission, but not having to lay out all of that money to another club to purchase a midfielder. They've tried that route, hasn't worked really well for them. So it seems like now they've realized they've had to make some different kind of moves here, whether it be the swap deal between Pjanic and Arturo, or an interesting transfer with Chelsea, as you said, where they can get him on a friendly type of payment plan for them, because, you know, with all the financial fair play stuff, they have to keep an eye out on that. So if they could facilitate something like that with Chelsea, where they don't have to pay up front, I could see this really, really picking up steam and going full speed ahead, because it would be very important for Sadi. And Chelsea and all the Premier League teams really are good teams to do that with, because they don't have the need to balance the books as much as a Serie A team does, or even a La Liga, or, you know, a Ligue 1 team has, you know. So it does make sense in a lot of ways, especially if he's kind of out of favor with Lampard at Chelsea.
So, Claudio, straight up, would you do this if you were Juve? Like, does this make Juve a better team? I know it makes them a more cohesive team technically, because Sarri gets his straw that stirs the drink, so to speak. He gets his little nucleus bit that he loves right in the middle of the pitch doing what Sarri's system says to do. But how even necessary is that with the players they have at Juve? So would you do this move if you were in charge of Juve?
I absolutely would. I think it helps Sarri a lot. I think he's still a very good player, Jorginho. I think, you know, in the Premier League, I mean, he's been good. I've seen him play for Chelsea. I've thought he played well for them, especially on the side. And even like you said, you know, with Lampard, he's done well. You know, it's more of a shift in ideas and maybe just trying to get some younger players into the system and change things around at Chelsea more than it is really that he doesn't like Jorginho or the way he plays or anything like that. So I think Jorginho is still a very good player. And in Italy, you know, you don't need to be a very fast or physical player, you know, so his career will last longer in Italy given his physical attributes. So I think it's somebody who they could have for a long time, you know, and I think he'll work well with what they have there and the attack, and he'll be able to facilitate things and kind of speed up the play, move the ball around for them a little bit, and just be really that coach on the field that Sadi has really become accustomed to. You know, he's been very, very important for him, and you know, Sadi hasn't really had that this season. So if they're going to keep Sadi there, if that's the plan, I think it's a no-brainer for Juve, because Jorginho to me is still, you know, a very good midfielder.
Yeah, I think it would be a good move for Juve. I do, because I think if you add identity into a team like you'd have with Jorginho and Sarri then, and then on top of identity, you have players like Ronaldo and Dybala and De Ligt, well, that's a pretty good combo. Like last season, Sarri was trying to build identity, but it was his first season at Chelsea, so you can only blame him so much if they lacked identity at times. But you added that on, and the identity did start to build a bit. You added the identity on to Eden Hazard, which was a pretty good combination, especially the way he was playing. So Juve will have identity and they will have superstars. So I think as long as the dressing room stays fine, which I imagine it will, as you can hear, my voice goes up a little bit because Sarri, you just never know. But I imagine it will. I think it would be a good move for Juve and probably help Sarri be more set in stone at Juve. Like, we already know his job is very fragile, which it is in general at any club, but we've known that, yeah, Sarri's the new Juve manager, but how long will he be the new Juve manager? If he gets Jorginho and things go well, that probably does cement him in a little bit more, but you never know. You never know with Pep out there lurking. Not that he's a free agent, Pep, but still. That rumor, I also feel like Claudio will never go away. But while we're speaking, here's my transition. While we're speaking of managers and the impact they have, and maybe if things go awry, the dressing room could turn. I'm not saying that's what's happening at Inter, not at all, but Antonio Conte is not a boring man, Claudio. He really is not. And Inter just suffered a very disappointing defeat. And of course, we have, David and I always joke about this, but we have Antonio Conte whining to an extent, just kind of saying, yeah, I'll take blame, but so should the players. And you just always feel like there's deflecting going on, even if you're really high on Antonio Conte and what he's got going on at Inter. Claudio, is this just another episode of Antonio Conte not knowing how to take a loss?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, it does sound that way. He's very unique in that sense that he feels like he constantly has to put pressure on what we call here the front office, you know, to make sure that they constantly are out there looking for better players. You know, after the loss to Bologna, which it was a bad loss, they're, you know, they're trying to hold on to the Scudetto race. You know, they're falling further and further behind, and they had a lead in the game, and obviously then Bologna went down to 10 men, and Inter squandered a 1-0 lead to a team with 10 men. So it was a really bad loss for them. But after the game, you know, Conte, he just basically said, you know, I'm the first one responsible, but the players, you know, also have to take some blame. And he also said, you know, we have to all show that we're worthy of Inter and a winning project, which to me is his way of saying, hey, you know, I don't know if some of these players are part of a winning project and we might need to replace them with some better players. So it's typical Conte. You know, that's what you're getting when you sign him up. He's a great manager, as we've seen, you know, this year with Inter. He's taken them from, you know, a team that dangled on the edge of the Champions League places and barely got into the Champions League over the past two seasons to, you know, really confirming them in the top four. So he's done a good job there. The season could have went better, obviously, being eliminated from the Champions League. And now, you know, they would have liked to be in the thick of the Scudetto race going down to the wire. So I think maybe, you know, he just embarrassed a little bit. Maybe he really felt like he would have a chance to dethrone Juventus, and I'm sure he would have loved nothing more than that, given the way he left Juventus years ago. But unfortunately, you know, the team just isn't there yet, and this is his way of letting Marotta and everybody in the front office there know that.
Well, you got to love him to an extent. You got to love him. I mean, he is who he is, and he certainly makes this podcast more entertaining. He gives us more things to talk about. But you have to say, you have to agree with this, that Hakimi, who's in, if Hakimi and Sandro Tonali both are signings for Inter this window, those are two great young signings. I mean, really good young signings. Automatically, Conte has to complain less next season. He has to. Because those are the type of signings, in my opinion, besides getting your huge fish that are already really established, those are the type of signings that every manager dreams of, especially someone like Hakimi, who fits in perfectly in Conte's formation. Do you agree that if both those signings happen, he already should complain less because of Hakimi, but if both those signings happen, Conte needs to tone down on the complaining?
Well, I believe he probably should have stopped complaining already, you know, to be honest with you, because since he's been there, they've done as much as possible, given their situation, their finances. They've really done as much as possible to make him happy. You know, they brought in Lukaku last year. They added Sensi and Barella for midfield help, which they desperately needed. You know, now, like you said, they're signing Hakimi. They're the leaders for Tonali. They've really been very, very active, you know, in purchasing players. And on the other hand, you know, they backed him 100% when he wanted to get rid of Perisic and Icardi last summer, which, you know, for me was difficult because those guys were a big part of Inter. And he came in and he was just like, yep, no, I know Icardi had drama before he even got there, but, you know, he came in and he was like, no, I don't want these guys here. I don't even want them training here, you know. And they backed him 100% and they were like, whatever you want. You know, they went out and they signed good players last year. This year, again, you know, they're leaders on the transfer market. They've already pretty much nailed down Hakimi. You know, Tonali is expected to join them eventually too. So to me, it's they're doing pretty much whatever they can to appease him. And I think it's more of just when you sign him on, this is what you're going to get, you know, no matter what. I mean, I think you could be Real Madrid. He could be the manager of Real Madrid and they could be throwing hundreds of millions at players. And, you know, he still will probably make comments like this, which to me is unfair. But, you know, he is a good manager and you have to know what you're getting when you bring him to your team.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, really well said there. Now, last thing on Inter. Well, two more items on Inter. They're not as serious or concrete, but we know Emerson has been a rumor lately. I think it's Fabrizio Romano himself who has talked about Inter being interested in Emerson. If Conte's wingbacks were Emerson and Hakimi, in my opinion, that's pretty damn good and fairly exciting as well going forward. How would you rate that, Claudio?
Yeah, it's very, very good. I mean, those are two areas that, you know, they need improvement and, you know, that position on both sides. I mean, so they, it would be a major improvement for them. I think it would also give them depth at the position, which is something that I think he's ultimately trying to build. I think he wants depth because he sees that Juventus really has so much depth and to compete with Juventus over a 38 game season, you need depth. Because players are injured, you know, look what happened to his midfield this year. They started out great. They were doing really, really well. And then next thing you know, Barella gets hurt, Sensi gets hurt, and they're kind of scrambling and going back to the midfield of last year. So he knows that with Asamoah there, that he's injury prone, he's getting older, and, you know, he really needs improvements in the wingers on the team. So I think for that reason, bringing in players like Hakimi and Emerson is someone that he knows, you know, from Chelsea, who he really, you know, likes. So I think bringing those kind of players to the team would really make them a significant threat to Juventus next season.
Yeah, and they just become much more his team, similar to the way we were saying if Sarri gets Jorginho at Juve. They just become a lot more his team. Last Inter item, though, Francesi being linked to Inter. How serious do you take it, and does he fit at Inter?
Well, how serious do I take? I mean, the Marzio reported it, so it is credible. I know they've tried to sign him in the past. I think when he was at Atalanta, they tried to they made like a little bid for him. It didn't work out, and he wanted to go to Milan. But you know, I take it seriously. I don't know how serious Milan is about selling him to Inter, because you know that's their crosstown rival, and the last thing they want to do is strengthen Inter more, because Inter, over the past, you know, 4 years maybe, has taken leaps ahead of Milan. So I don't know if Milan really wants to further that by giving them one of their own players. And Kessie's a very important player for Milan. You know, the fans really don't love him, I guess, but he has been a huge part of their team. He plays almost every game, you know, knock on wood, he really has no injury issues. And he has a terrific motor. He's running up and down the field the entire game. You know, his decision making in the final third is a bit lacking, but that's not what he would need to be worried about at Inter. You know, that's not really what his role would be at Inter. He'd be more of a defensive midfielder who's going to win the ball back, who's going to play box to box and kind of just get the ball and give it to the playmakers. You know, unfortunately, Milan doesn't have significant playmakers around him, so he has to do a little bit more of that for them. But I think he would work out really well for Inter if they could pull off the transfer, because his physical attributes would work really, really well under Conte. But given that he's placed for Milan now, the only thing I could see is, you know, if there's a change in leadership, I'll say, because I know we're going to get to it later. If there's a change in leadership at Milan, you know, they might try to sell some players to turn a profit and fund future transfers. So that could work in Inter's favor. But any deal between the two clubs is always a little difficult for me.
Yeah, makes sense. And I want to get to that. Great tease by you. I want to get to that other Milan in just a second. But I do want to ask you this question that's kind of taking a step back, but it still has Inter in mind. Considering the fact that, yeah, I'm not saying things are going poorly with Conte at Inter, and it still looks like they should only improve. But just considering that we've already seen, sure, you can be backed and you can have a fairly good team and a good manager, but it's not so easy to just snap your fingers and have Inter be that dominant team like they used to be. Does this even put it in more perspective how impressive it was that Jose Mourinho won the treble with them? Do you think all of these struggles in the last, I mean, it's been a while now. Do you think all these struggles that Inter have endured just make Mourinho's treble winning season look that much better?
Oh yeah, it's really impressive, because if you look at Inter's history, they've won a bunch of Scudetto. They have, you know, but kind of leading up to Mourinho, you know, before the Calciopoli situation, scandal, whatever you want to call it, Inter really struggled to win Serie A. They weren't really winning Serie A. In the Champions League, they were competing, but they never got to the finals or you know, made any significant headway there either. And then obviously when Calciopoli happened, then Juventus went to Serie B, Inter were very dominant, and it was more because, you know, they were able to keep their team. And they added Ibrahimovic, and they built a really, really strong team there. That really the other Serie A teams, because Juventus and Serie B and Milan also got docked a little bit and was kind of, you know, on the way down, let's say, at that point. Inter really dominated and were able to take over Serie A. But, you know, like I said, that was more of a lack of competition. So when you brought Mourinho in, it was so impressive that he took this team that, you know, was dominant in Serie A, but really wasn't competing in the Champions League. And he won all three trophies for them in two seasons, you know, because that was only his second season at Inter. And in that season, he had a lot of, he made a lot of different moves. You know, he sold Ibrahimovic to Barcelona, which was, you know, a big deal. And he basically used that money to bring in players like Snyder and Pandev and a bunch of, you know, I won't say lesser names, but they weren't really superstars. I mean, Snyder was, but, you know, he was really on his way out of Real Madrid. It wasn't like a, you know, that they had to beg him to come to Inter either. So, you know, I'm going on and on about it. It happened a while ago, but it's just because it really, really is impressive to me that in two seasons, he basically, you know, changed the whole team over and was able to win Champions League, something that Inter was trying to do for many, many years and was not able to do. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the greatest managers in their history, you know, if not the greatest, and he was only there for two seasons. So I'm very impressed by Mourinho. And I think throughout these past years since then, he's really just looked better and better. Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. Now, not currently, he's doing his own job to look worse and worse now, Mourinho, but you're right. His legacy, what he has done, absolutely. I think it only looks better and better, especially within the Inter context. So really well said. I appreciate your insight there. But now let's actually get to that tease that you so brilliantly laid out. The other Milan, they have went through a pretty big change here. I paralleled it. We're both U.S. sports guys. I'm a Boston guy. You're a New York guy. So we're definitely on the opposite end of things. But I paralleled it to, well, Milan have just done with Ragnik what the Patriots did a long time ago with Bill Belichick. Now, it's worked with Bill Belichick maybe better than it's worked with anyone ever, where Bill Belichick, so to speak, runs the Patriots. Yeah, he's not the owner, but he is the coach. He makes all the moves. He pretty much oversees everything that's day-to-day that has any impact on the field. Seems like Milan have made a pretty big move here. So, Claudio, what is your take on Ragnik pretty much being given the keys to the whole car?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult to say right now because they've just been through so many revolutions over the past few seasons. I mean, you know, Berlusconi sold the team to Yong Hung Lee, who brought in Mirabelli and Fassone, who spent, you know, over 200 million euros and really got nothing out of it. You know, I hate to say, but that's the truth. And then, you know, Yong Hung Lee loses the team and Elliot comes in and basically fires Fassone and Mirabelli and hires Leonardo and Maldini, and then Leonardo doesn't last more than a season before he goes to PSG, and you know they bring in Maldini and they surround him with Boban and Massara to kind of lead the team, and now that, you know, Boban got fired now and Ragnik looks to come in, which is basically going to have Maldini leave the team, and while this is all going on, they've been through a bunch of managers as well, so you know, you can't really say that this is going to be the long-term guy because you just don't know with them. You hope that it will be. I know he has a great record in Germany, you know, especially finding young talents, which I think, you know, given the budget at Milan and their issues with financial fair play, I think it's the right move, I'll say. You know, I think it's a guy that has experience that could probably help bring them out of this current situation because he offers some different ideas versus bringing somebody in who's just going to try to sign, you know, top players for big money. And that kind of chokes them, you know, in terms of finances, because they don't really have the finances to support that. So I like that it's somebody who's going to think a little bit out of the box here and bring in some younger guys and maybe build a strong core that could grow together and kind of, bring Milan back to its glory. It's just, you know, I don't know long term if they'll give him enough time to do what he's going to need to do. I don't know if Elliot, the current owners, will want to sell the team. And then if they do that, will the next owner want him, you know, or will they want to bring in their own guy? Usually, as you know, especially in American sports, owners want to bring their own people in. So, you know, who knows what's going to go on with that. And now you're giving him the keys to the castle. So it's not like, okay, well, he's a great manager and we just need to build, you know, the sporting side around him, or he's great at the technical and sporting side and we just need to find that manager that's going to bring the team to the next level. You're giving him the keys. So if it doesn't work out for him as a manager, let's say, and the team isn't performing well, what do you do then? You know, do you say, okay, we're going to get another manager and we're going to have you still run the sporting side of things? Or, you know, do you have to fire him completely? So there's a lot up in the air. And given the inconsistency with Milan over the past few seasons, you just never know. And you can never be confident to say that it's going to work out. But I will say that it seems like the right guy. It seems like the right move. It's definitely the direction that they should be heading in, because they need like a complete rebuild from the start, just younger players, guys that will grow together, guys that will want to play for the team. And so I think in those aspects, it is the right move. But, you know, it remains to be seen if he'll have the patience and the support from the organization to really fulfill, you know, whatever goals he has set in mind for Milan.
So, I mean, there's risk involved, obviously. It all sounds nice, but we just need to see how it actually goes out there and comes together or doesn't come together. So this time next year, Claudio, how likely do you think it is that we're doing a podcast and we're saying, shouldn't have let go of Pioli?
So I'm not huge on Pioli. I know lately they've been playing better under him since the restart. They've done pretty well. I mean, but you know, for example, last week they beat Roma, and then they beat Lazio, and in the middle of the week they tie Spal. You know, so it's just inconsistency. I think you need a manager who's going to bring out the best of the team and who's going to be able to beat Roma and Lazio, but then not throw away those points by tying a team like Spal. And Pioli, you know, you kind of know what he is. You know, he's been to Inter. He had his run at Inter where he had a great run, and then the team kind of fell apart. At Fiorentina, he had the same thing. You know, he had a great run, and the team kind of fell apart. Same with Bologna. So you know what he is. I don't think he's a long-term solution for the team. I know they look good right now, but I really just don't think that he's a long-term solution. I don't think anybody's really gonna miss him. You know, for me, the guy was Gattuso last year. I think that was a guy that had learned how to be a really good manager by taking his lumps in lesser leagues, you know, in Greece and wherever else he was managing before. And he was ready to go and manage Milan. And, you know, it meant so much to him to manage Milan. So he really brought the best out of the players because he showed the players what it meant to play for Milan, and they played really hard for him. I mean, they had a struggle towards the end of last season, but you know, the team just really isn't as good as the other teams they're competing against. I mean, those are just the facts. So if you have a man who is getting the best out of the players and you add some significant players to him, to his roster, you know, chances are he will keep the team competing and he will grow the team. So Gattuso is the guy that I think they should have probably held on to. But in this whole Ragnick thing, the last thing I'm worried about is losing Pioli, to be completely honest with you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I just wanted to ask, and that gives me a much more clear idea of, yeah, you might think that this is risky, the direction they're going, but it's certainly not a situation where you're coming away saying, oh, poor Pioli. So it's more about just the risk, the inevitable risk of Milan ever changing a direction. Like you said, they've done that a lot, but no one should really be crying about not having Pioli anymore at Milan. So you mentioned Gattuso, and that's another good transition. You're doing all of these maybe on purpose, but maybe by accident. That's another good transition to Napoli. And there's something exciting maybe happening at Napoli now. Then maybe it's a little slower than some other teams, but these links to Victor Osimhen. If Victor Osimhen does become Napoli's next striker, that's pretty noteworthy, Claudio. So I'll speak on Osimhen a little bit because I like him, I rate him, but from your perspective, like for me, I want to see if you agree with this. For me, that's an exciting move where Napoli can at least look to the future and say, oh, that could be something. That's how I view it. How do you view that?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, it seems like Milik is on his way out. So they are definitely going to need to replace him. And it's a young, exciting signing. It's, you know, something that, you know, they haven't done really. You know, they haven't brought in a big name like that. You know, I mean, I shouldn't say that. They've actually prided themselves on bringing in, you know, players that at cheaper values like Koulibaly, and guys that really have a lot of potential like Osimhen does. And it's someone that they're going to need because they're lacking a little bit in the striker department. You know, Mertens is getting older, even though he signed an extension. Insigne is not really an all-out goal scorer. He's more of a playmaker and facilitator. So I think he'll work perfectly with the attacking options that they have now. And it's someone whose value will go up over time for Napoli. And, you know, like you said, right now there's a lot of good going on in that team. You know, the Gattuso came in and kind of brought the energy back to them. You know, the passion of the fans in Napoli is so significant, and you pair that with Gattuso's passion, which is very, very similar and at the same level, and it's just been a match made in heaven. So it's good to see them trying to sign a player like Osimhen, who, you know, will really help Gattuso go bring the team to the next level. So, I mean, you watch him a lot in France. So, you know, what are your thoughts on him? What is he actually going to be bringing to the team?
Yeah, I've been watching him a lot lately, especially because Chelsea for a while were linked with him. So before Timo Werner came in, he was somebody that I was thinking could be in Chelsea blue next season, even with Tammy Abraham being a young striker. Seemed like there were certainly thoughts from knowledgeable people that Osimhen was very much liked by Chelsea. Now, maybe that's because Chelsea faced him in the Champions League and Lampard has already shown a strong interest in players he's gone up against live. The first one would be Hakim Ziyech there. But yeah, between watching Osimhen against my Chelsea and then just watching a lot extra of him once rumors started to pick up, really impressed. I mean, he's a player that you find yourself paying attention to, even if you didn't go into the game paying attention to him or thinking about him. Whereas, like, I say it because I think when we all watch a game, we might have a player in mind that we watch a little bit more than the next. I mean, we're human, so we could be watching the ball, but we're not all robotic and we don't view everyone equally. I'm sure there's a player that you listening right now, that you listening on the other end, Claudio, watches a little bit more when your team's out there than the other. And it could just be a superstar. Like maybe if you're watching Juve and you're not always watching the ball, you got your eye on Ronaldo a little bit. I mean, it's only natural. When you watch Lille, if you just went in as a neutral and you're like, okay, let's watch this game, you'd be watching Osimhen after a couple minutes. His work rate, that's what I really come away with. His work rate is very impressive for a striker. My God, does he press? And he can do a team press. I'm not that knowledgeable on Lille's system and how much. I mean, I've watched them a decent amount, but still, I couldn't necessarily tell you exactly how they like to play. But he'll do some individual pressing, absolutely. And if you have a structured high press, team press, what have you, he'll be really useful in that regard. But just that overall energy that he brings on both sides of the ball. He's a player that if you play a ball into space, you get a nice ball out to him on the left-hand side or the right-hand side. Of course, he'll be central. But you put it out into space, he'll get there. He'll get there. And he's just very talented. He needs game time. That's the big thing that made me hesitant on picturing him at Chelsea, because before Timo Werner came in, I was thinking, all right, well, Tammy, he's going to get every chance to be a starter. He should have every chance to be a starter. And I still do believe that, but I'm not going to bore you with Chelsea details. Maybe if Tammy struggles, Werner does play more centrally. But regardless, before Werner was in the picture, I was thinking, well, I'd love Osimhen. Be a great problem to have, having Osimhen and Tammy Abraham. But Osimhen, from everything I've heard, he just needs to get out there and kind of work off a little bit of his rawness and polish it up, which many young players do. It's not like it's just specific to Osimhen. But he needs to go out there and play. He needs to be more prepared in different situations against different teams. So obviously, if you're playing counterattacking football, this guy's going to be dynamic. But against deep blocks, maybe he'll just have to work on that, like many players do, like I've said. So you have a really good base. You have a really good base with Victor Osimhen. And Claudio, I want to see if you agree with this. I almost think it helps Napoli with Osimhen, and just in general, but with someone like Osimhen, where you bring him in, and you should play him a lot. You've mentioned the players they have, and they don't have like a young striker like this. I rate Milik, but we have heard all about his future. I think it helps Napoli. I almost can parallel this to Chelsea this season, but Napoli aren't winning the Scudetto next season. Like, I think that's, anything can happen, sure. But I think it's fairly obvious Napoli are not going to win the Scudetto next season. I think that helps them. I think that helps them with the development of someone like Victor Osimhen, where maybe now in a couple seasons, you project Napoli to hopefully improve all around Osimhen, but Osimhen, we know Serie A, Claudio, can be a striker's league. My God, if you're a capable striker in Serie A, you can put up some goals. I'm not saying it's this free-flowing, non-defensive league. No, of course, it's not. But strikers, if you are in the right situation, like Ciro Immobile is at Lazio, we always talk about it. Sure, he's a great player, but he's really comfortable at Lazio. We know Belotti, yeah, he has his ups and downs, but even a striker like Belotti at a lesser team, and I put that in quotes, can have really good seasons. It can definitely be a league where strikers succeed. So for me, I see like next season, Osimhen should have some really good moments and then some probably rough moments. But I feel like next year is just a building year for Napoli, and Osimhen's kind of the poster boy for that building year. Not to say they shouldn't be competing for top four and stuff. They should. But when we're talking about title challengers, this move would kind of fit in line with we're in it a little bit more for the long term. So it's a player with energy. It's a player with a lot of talent. And it's a player who I feel like will give fans a little bit of hope for the future. So, Claudio, do you almost agree with that maybe because of the distance between Juve and Napoli and maybe even Inter and Napoli, it almost helps Napoli keep a clearer direction and really build something for the longer term?
Definitely. You know, I felt like, you know, once Sarri left and, you know, they tried to bring the Ancelotti in and kind of build on the success that Sarri started and tried to, because Ancelotti, you know, he's such a good team manager. He's a great players coach. And I mean, I know the Bayern Munich fans are probably laughing at me saying that, but in Italy and in England, you know, that's really been his experience. You know, he's a pretty good actual players manager. So they tried to build on Sarri by bringing Ancelotti in and trying to get a few more years out of their aging stars. But at the same time, they also started making moves for younger guys like this past year, Chucky Lozano, and obviously Fabian Ruiz, who's, you know, been a really, really good signing for them. So I could see Osimhen being added to that new younger core, because in the attack, like I mentioned before, you know, they still have Mertens. They haven't seen yet. Milik seems like he's on his way out. So I think he will find playing time there for Napoli rather easily. And I think they wouldn't spend the money and sign someone like him unless they knew that they were going to give him significant playing time and help him grow. And the expectations, as you said, are a little less, a lower, because they're not going to compete for the Scudetto next season. I think Napoli at this point, I think they just want to constantly be competing for the top four, try to get into the Champions League as much as possible, because they're in good financial shape. You know, De Laurentiis has done a really good job financially with the team, and they have no financial fair play issues. So anytime they're in the Champions League and going further and further in the Champions League, it means a lot of revenue for the team. And that helps them, you know, because their books are already balanced, that revenue helps them spend money and bring in more and more players. So I think that's a little bit of where their goals are set. And I think he'll fit perfectly into that, because, you know, he is an all-out striker. And, you know, Milik, between the injuries and his style of play, it just hasn't really worked out for him too much. So I think Osimhen could be a nice change of pace for Napoli, and they could pair him with some of the younger guys like Lozano. Insigne, even though he's been there for a few years, is still not, you know, terribly old, and he'll be there for a little while longer. So to me, if they could pull it off, I think it would be a good signing, and I think he'll do well in Italy, because like you said, you could score a lot of goals in Italy. You know, it's not easy, but, you know, Ronaldo does it. Higuain did it for Napoli, you know, that one season, and continued to do it for Juventus. So, you know, if you're a very strong striker, you can score a lot of goals, especially with the right team around you. And I think Napoli will have that for him, and they'll give him the playing time that he needs. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that there at the end. Like, don't acquire Osimhen, Napoli, if you're not going to, so to speak, build around him. You don't have to cater the whole thing to him. I'm not saying he's that good where the whole entire team needs to be built around him. But no, don't acquire a young, exciting player like that that a lot of top teams, or at least good teams, would want in a non-pandemic world. You got to remember, folks, that because of the pandemic, maybe more teams would have been in for Osimhen. But just like I said, Napoli, don't acquire a player like that if you're not going to put him in the best situation to succeed, because he can be a really good one, like a really good one. I talked to Julien Laurens of ESPN, who covers Ligue 1 and just French football in general. I talked to him on my podcast, and I really rate how he views players, and he was just so high on Osimhen, just said glowing things about him and said, this is a player that if you give him game time, he kind of has the mentality as well to just improve and improve and improve and just be somebody that fans can feel really positive about. So Napoli, if you do get Osimhen, that's something to be really excited about, in my opinion, at least. All right, so we talked there. This is our last topic here, Claudio. We talked there about, well, maybe it almost helps Napoli to have such separation between them and Juve right now so they can fully focus on what they're doing and not feel like they have to rush or reach. But on the Juve side of things, let's get a little bit more topical as we close up shop. I want to ask you this. Who has a better chance in the Champions League? This version of Juve, who are now firing on all cylinders, or Atalanta, who are dangerous as can be?
So it's a great question because Atalanta, I mean, they've been amazing, you know, especially since before the restart. But it's like they haven't lost any momentum at all. Whereas you see, like, a team like Lazio has really struggled since the restart. But Atalanta just kind of picked up where they left off, and they've just been really dominant. There's no other way to put it. So Juventus obviously has a stronger team and better players and more and star players. But let's not forget, Atalanta is already in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, where Juventus, they're down, you know, in the first, they lost 1-0 to Lyon in the first leg of the round of 16. And, you know, they have to overcome that deficit in order to advance to the quarterfinals. So they're around, not only are they around behind Atalanta, they're even, you know, in a negative situation. I mean, obviously, I truly believe that Juventus could easily go ahead and beat Lyon in the game and move on to the quarterfinals, but it still has to be done, whereas Atalanta is already in the quarterfinals. Now, given that, let's say that Juventus gets to the quarterfinals, you know, my mind is telling me that Juventus has a better chance because of the team that they have and all the players and the star players. But you know what? Anything could happen. If 2020 has told you anything, it's that anything could happen in this world. And if there is a year that Atalanta is going to win the Champions League, it's 2020. So, I mean, just the format of the competition and the way it's going to be played, I think that they have as good of a shot as anybody to win this thing, especially if they keep their momentum going and they get to the end of August in this sort of form and they just have to win an eight-team tournament. I think it's very, very possible for them to do. I'm not going to bet my house on it, but just my overall gut feeling right now, and I know this isn't really an expert opinion because I'm really going off of my gut right now, but I do feel like Atalanta has a better shot at winning the Champions League this year than Juventus. And of course, since I said that, given all my other predictions on this podcast, Atalanta's probably going to lose every game from here until the rest of the season now. But, you know, I'm going to go with it. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Honestly, I'm not just saying it. I agree with you. We've been speaking so highly of Atalanta all season long on this podcast. David, credit to him. He keeps saying, like, when there's a draw for the Champions League, that Atalanta is the last team, well, not the last team, but just not a team you'd want to draw, like not a team you'd want to face because they can punch you in the mouth. And I also think that Atalanta probably have like a nothing to lose attitude in the Champions League. So you combine that with such an electric side, that can be terrifying. And Claudio, you and I are U.S. sports fans. Don't Atalanta kind of give you the vibe of a team in March Madness that would upset everyone? Just keep winning and just carry. I know momentum might have been stopped a little bit because of the pandemic, but whatever. They can create their own momentum. They're good enough. Where just feels like maybe Cinderella team is actually an insult because they clearly are a very good team, but it just feels like they're the team in the Champions League where, yeah, a fairweather fan, a neutral, will be like, oh, whatever. They're an easy one to steamroll. Maybe if you don't pay attention to Serie A, you're like, oh, great, we got Atlanta. No, no, no. Like, they're a team with spirit, they're a team with togetherness, and they're a team that can punch you in the mouth. So I don't think any fan or any team should take them lightly. And, yeah, like you said, maybe it doesn't make any sense, but 2020 hasn't made any sense. So I think Atlanta are almost just as dangerous as anyone left in the Champions League. I mean, Bayern Munich, whoo, whoo. But, yeah, Atlanta is one of the last teams I'd want to go up against right now. And for me, I feel like there is more dysfunction coming from Juve. So even though they do look really good right now, I don't know. I don't think it's ever smooth sailing with this Juve under Sarri. And that's not a big hit to Sarri. I promise you it's not. I just feel like that would be too easy if all of a sudden Juve are fine and there's just no more dysfunction or there's no more drama. Nah. Nah, there's still more coming. There's still more coming. So they might wrap up the Scudetto, but nah. They're not smooth sailing yet. We're Atlanta, nothing to lose, an electric team. So I know nothing to lose is not technically true, but I feel like they'd kind of have that attitude, kind of have that chip on their shoulder. So I agree, Claudio. I do agree. And I feel like David would at least like our take there. I don't know what he would choose, but he's pretty high on Atlanta. And he has been the spokesperson for like, hey, guys, don't underestimate this team. So I think we all could be in agreement there. All right, well, we should all be in agreement that we did okay. We did okay. We filled in for David, I would say, at least decently. Now, in other countries, decent sometimes means like quite good. I mean it more the American way, where we say decent, like, yeah, pretty good, pretty good, where our voice goes high. But nonetheless, Claudio, I know we've both said it, not under the greatest of circumstances, but I really did have fun with you once again, filling in for David. It's a team effort. So thank you so much. And also just let my listeners know, in case they don't know who you are, where can they find your tweets, your work, etc.?
Yeah, so as always, it was a pleasure to do this with you, Alex. Had a great time and wish David all the best. Hopefully he has a speedy recovery and can be back and everyone can listen to his beautiful voice later this week. In the meantime, yeah, if you're looking for me, the best place to find me is on Twitter, at cperfetto11, and that's where you can find all of my stuff and interesting takes. So hope everybody is safe out there and had a really great time doing the podcast with you, Alex. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Cheers, Claudio, and cheers to you, the listener. Really, if you're a patron, thank you so much for all the wonderful messages. I mean, I'm saying thank you. I do mean thank you, but definitely, I know David thanks you, and I know he's reached out to a number of you on Patreon just to thank you for your well wishes. And I know that even if you're not a patron, you probably did get win through a tweet that David was struggling with something here. So thank you to everybody who's been so kind and has wished David well. And we know are just consistent, loyal listeners to the podcast. And we know you appreciate how regularly we put out an episode, but when we do miss one, you're always very, very understanding. So thank you for that constant support. Like Claudio said, hopefully David is back in his normal seat for the next episode. If he's not, we will certainly act accordingly, but hopefully he is. And no matter what, thank you so much for the support, and we'll talk to you next time.